Abraham Lincoln was in a debate with Stephen Douglas, and they were raging back and forth, and each of them were defending their positions. And at one point, Douglas accused Lincoln of being two-faced. And Lincoln said, as he pointed at his face, said, "That's preposterous. If I were two-faced, would I be wearing this one?" and won the debate. I always like that story because it reminds me, first of all, that, you know, it's okay to do a little self-deprecating humor from time to time, but it also reminds me a lot, and I think a lot about two-facedness, and I think about how we are in one place and then how we're something else in another place, and we always kind of pick the different places. And then, have you ever been in those spaces where two of your groups mix, right? And you kind of get confused about, like, see, am I the pastor of the church here, or am I playing basketball? Like, because I'm different on the basketball court than I am, you know, because I don't, here I'm usually not taunting people, but on the basketball court I am, but then when villagers are playing basketball with me, then I get all confused, like I don't know what role, and part of that is because I'm kind of worried about what people think of me, and that whole idea of the concern that we have of what will people really think of me. It's like a thing I think that just drives us. And so, to protect ourselves, we develop masks. We wear masks. So, if I were to ask you, when you got up this morning, what mask did you put on? If I were to ask you, when you came here tonight, what mask did you put on? What do you want people to think about you? What do you want to look like? What do you want people to imagine about you? Because we get real excited about what people think of us. Matter of fact, the truth is, for most of us, for all of us at various times, I think we're far more concerned about what people think of us than we are about what God thinks about us. It's pretty hard for us to fake out God. I have studied the Bible for a long time, and I discovered that God is omniscient. You know, He knows everything. He's everywhere present, so He's always around us. Like God's in on it, right? Like God knows. But people don't. And so there's things that we hide, and we begin to hide, and we begin to pretend. And so the pretense is masking. And in Matthew chapter 6, starting with verse 16, it says, "When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show men they are fasting. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that it will not be obvious to men that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you." What are we trying to impress people with? Well, we're trying to impress people that we're a certain way. And the Pharisees had this thing of they wanted to really look good. They were the religious leaders of the day, and they were very pious people. Piety has gotten a bad name in the culture in which we live, we think of the pious people as sort of those sanctimonious, just always good, nice people who pray all the time, and you know, they're just always bless you, and they're just kind and nice, and and but it's like a fraud. Well, it's not the piety that's wrong. Okay, it's not the piousness that's wrong. It's the hypocrisy that's wrong. It's being a hypocrite that's wrong. It's pretending to be that way when you're not really. And that's where, and that's what we come up against in this passage. Jesus is kind of has noticed that this pious behavior is just fraudulent. It's fake, and as he sees that, and as he points it out to us, he's not being against piety. Piety, there's the kind of the three elements that we've seen in piety over the last week and now this week are like generosity, giving, and prayer, and now fasting. That those are like elements of being pious, being a pious person. If you're generous, and you're a person who prays, and you're a person who occasionally fasts, then those are like signs, kind of outward signs of your piety, that you're a good person, that you're doing the right things, that you're a God follower, a Christ follower. That was kind of the picture that we had. Now, because people weren't generous, but wanted people to think they were, and because people wanted to pray, be seen as people who prayed, but didn't, and people fasted, they began to fake it. They began to pretend. And so there were people who walked around looking very pious, and people go, wow, because you know what? You can fake generosity, right? One of the greatest ways to fake generosity is to make a big show of, you know, writing a check, but not letting anybody see the amount, and then putting it in the basket, right? Because that you look good. People go, wow, you're generous. That's really nice. That person's generous. That feels good. That's nice. Or kind of calling attention to giving when you give. Like, so-and-so has a need, and look, here, you know, I know, you know, Ryan's kind of been struggling, so hey, Ryan, you know, oh, this is just between you and me, you know. You know, it's... right? There was no way that you were giving that to him. But right, you know, like we make a big show of it, and then we're stingy. In the end, we're stingy. And so that stinginess comes out because we fake it. And that's what hypocrites do. That's what hypocrisy does. And fasting was a tradition, a Jewish tradition, but it was also a tradition in the whole culture. But the Pharisees always chose to fast 2 days a week. That was a show of their piety, a show of their relationship with God. They twice a week would fast. Matter of fact, there's an old Jewish Torah a conversation about that. Some rabbi once said, or they said about a rabbi, that he would starve to death if it wasn't for the fact that he fasted twice a week. And so he, you know, it was like, it was just the self-denial. Fasting was a self-denial, a self-sacrifice, a giving up something that you long for and need, food, and that you just voluntarily gave it up. But there was a purpose in giving it up, and the purpose was what was missing. The purpose was to find intimacy with God. The purpose was to come closer to God. The purpose was to find God in a really messed up world and in those scary places. And so the purpose of piety got lost. Piety will show, okay? So you can't be against the showing of piety. People who are generous become recognized as generous people. You're just stuck with that. People who pray a lot are recognized as people who pray. People who give up food for, you know, 2 days a week are going to be noticed. It's not that you can hide it or that you should, right? But it's a matter of where your heart's directed. It's a matter of what's going on inside as you do that. Well, the truth is, these are all easily fake. but and what the fasters were doing were faking by putting on a disfigured face, which I just love. I mean, isn't that a great line, right? Oh, I'm so hungry. You know, I haven't eaten all day. No, I'm fasting. I'm fasting. You know, it's okay. No, no, really. You know, it's just like just contorting. Look how much I'm suffering on behalf of God. Isn't it just great how good I am? That's the message we're getting, right? And God just, Jesus says, no. When you fast, put oil on yourself. Now, putting the oil on was part of just the daily grooming. What happened was they would not put the oil on, they wouldn't anoint their heads with oil, they wouldn't look good, they wouldn't dress amongst, you know, according to the fashion and custom of the day. And instead, it was like, I am so devoted to God that I don't even have time for personal hygiene. You know, like, I am just so with God. And he's saying, no, practice personal hygiene. Do the whole, you know, do the rituals, the daily rituals, just like you normally do. Don't try to look different. But go ahead and fast. I mean, go ahead and deny yourself the food. That's okay. That's something you're allowed to do. That it's okay to do that. But what happens is, there are those who, the Pharisees, the pretenders, the pretension people, who say, you know, I want to look like I'm doing that stuff without actually doing it. And I think in the Pharisees' case, there is a genuine desire to honor God. Like, I don't think Pharisees always get a bad rap in the Bible, right? I mean, in Christian culture and in the Christian everywhere I've ever lived, Pharisees just get a bad rap. And we just say, oh, they're just evil, they're all proud and arrogant. Well, they're not different from me, you know? I'm kind of that way. I want to look good in front of people. I hate to be embarrassed. I hate to look bad. Matter of fact, Eric and I were talking this week, and I was talking to him about this demand that I have of myself, that I have to be competent, right? I have to be capable. Now, I can trace it back and have traced it back to lies I was told as a kid, lies I believed about myself. You know, when I was born without the ability to see very good, so everything was very blurry for me. And so in class through the first grade, they said, oh, he's not smart, you know, he's stupid, he just doesn't get it, we're going to have to send him away to somewhere else. And then later on, I went to work for an auto parts company years later, and I don't know anything about cars, right? And everybody who works in an auto parts company works there because it's about cars, and they're like into cars, and they know everything there is to know about cars. I didn't know anything about cars. So I was taking the books home at night and studying, and I was walking around through this, you know, we had 55,000 items in this place, and I opened every box and looked and figured out what those things were, you know. Oh, that's what that looked like. Because I was what? Embarrassed. I didn't want to look stupid in front of people. So I had this thing about competency, and then if someone attacks my competency, what do? Well, I run and I get books and I study and I, because I got to be competent, right? But when the demand is that you all see me as competent, well, I'm not. And you all know I'm not, you know? And you get the, and I'm not competent in the ways that you think I should be, or I'm, you know, and then, so I say, no, I have to put on my competency mask, you know? I have to make them believe. So I'll make them believe I'm competent. Well, instead of it's just okay to not be competent, you know? Does God hate me less or love me more because I'm competent or incompetent? Does competency really matter? Do I have to be competent? And it was so releasing to find out that God loves me when I'm competent, when I'm not competent, areas where I'm capable, areas where I'm not capable. And all he's asking from me is honesty. For me to say, I just don't know how to do that. You know, I just don't know how to be that thing or that person or whatever you want me to be. For me to just stand up and say, I don't know anything about auto parts. No, not into cars. Why are you working here? Beats me. The guy got me the job. It pays good, but I just don't know. And that is okay not to know. It's okay to be in that little scary wilderness place of, I don't know. But you know what? I didn't want to look bad at Carter C. Jones Battery and Electric Company. I didn't want to look bad. So I studied, I learned, I did all this stuff because, and I wore the mask of someone who knows about cars to this day. I think, you know, like every once in a while, I actually know a little bit of stuff because I picked some stuff up because I was actually smart. And so I know some stuff about cars, and then I know what things are called because, you know, I opened all 55,000 part number boxes. And so I actually know what they are. And so, you know, people say, well, what is that? Oh, that's an armature in, from your starter. And they go, wow, you're brilliant. No, I'm not. You know, because I don't know what it does or why it does it or any of those things. And if you ever asked me to make a car, I couldn't do it. But I know that, you know, I know some stuff about it. And that, and so we get, like, we wear that mask. So I try to put on that mask. Now, pretty much everybody at the company knew I was faking it, right? Because they're not stupid. Because they really are car people, you know? They really do know all this stuff. And so they're going, there's this. And so they would catch me, right? They would catch me. And then I would look stupid. And I didn't like looking stupid. So I have to become more competent. So I have to study more and learn more. And I have to... So what do we do? What do we all do, right? We find a couple people who we can trust. And we ask them to teach us, right? So I went to the counter boss at Carter Jones. And I said, I don't know all this stuff. And he said, I know. So when I didn't know what something was, I'd sneak over into the aisle, I'd show it to him, I'd say, what the heck is this thing? And he'd say, oh, that's, if he knew, he would tell me, and then he'd tell me what book to look it up in, and then I got to look good. But it was really him looking good through me, right? We find people around us who are competent, who are capable in this area, and we kind of try to use them or learn from them. Or we just find friends, people that are safe, right? People that are very safe for us to admit that we're kind of stupid about this or dumb about this or we just don't have it together over here. But the rest of the world will see our mask. The rest of the world puts on our mask. So what's the purpose of our mask? Purposes of masks, amongst other things, are to hide our flaws. I wear a mask because I want to hide flaws. We put on makeup because we want to, what? Cover up flaws. Or perceive flaws. Right? Because usually we're not nearly as flawed as we think we are. But whatever we perceive as flaws, we put on makeup because we want to cover that flaw. We want it to make it look better than it really is. Right? We dress certain ways. We do all those things because we want to hide our flaws. Because there's this deep understanding in all of us that in some areas, in many areas of life, we are simply flawed. And that's fine when it's just auto parts and doesn't matter. But when it's in real, intimate, true, close-up relationship, we are also flawed, and we begin to want to hide those flaws from each other. Here in this room, where there are many people who spend a lot of time together and love each other and care for each other, but there are still those things, those flaws, those little areas that we try to cover up. We try to pretend that we're just kind of afraid that if they find out about that flaw, they won't like us. We won't be special. I've mentioned before that one of my sins is that I have this desire to be clapped for, to be applauded for, to be, you know, to be recognized. I guarantee you that that's not my sin alone, right? I guarantee you there's a lot of people in this room who have that same passion, that same desire to be recognized, to be applauded, to be, matter of fact, I think we all have it to some degree, right? To be recognized as really good people, not flawed people. And so we find our flaws and we want to hide our flaws. The purpose of a mask is to impress people. Clearly in the passage that we're talking about tonight, there's a, I want to impress you And that goes back to what I was talking about before. Mostly we're more interested in impressing each other than we are in impressing God. We want to have, we put on the mask because we want people around us to be impressed with us. Not push away from us or turn away from us. And the reality is we wear masks because we want to hide our identity. We are people who are afraid of, ashamed of our identity. And the fear is, if you really, really, really know me, you will reject me. You will no longer care about me. You won't provide for me. I won't get what I long for. I won't get what I desire. I won't get what I am passionate about. I won't get what I think I have to have in order to live. If I am honest at Charlie Jones, I could lose my job, because why in the world would they hire some guy who doesn't know anything about cars when there are thousands of people out there who do know stuff about cars and would love to have the job, right? I mean, that's what I'm thinking. So what does my fear do? What does that fear do? Is instead of just walking in the identity of someone who says, you know what, I am the only 16-year-old kid on planet Earth who doesn't care about cars, but here I am, you know? To just walk in that identity as someone who it doesn't matter, you know, that it's okay, and that if I lose this job, there's another job waiting, or not, that God will be enough, irrespective of what happens, no. I have to project that identity, I have to project this false identity, because if I don't, I can lose. I don't want to lose. I don't want to lose what I have. Doesn't seem like a lot, but I don't want to lose it. And so we walk into that hiding of our identity, and we wear the masks because we're far more concerned about what people think of us than what God thinks of us. Because people have power in our lives. People have great power in our lives. They choose whether or not we think, whether or not we will be loved, whether or not we'll be accepted, whether or not we'll be pursued. Because most of us want to be accepted. We want to be loved. We want to be pursued. We want people to clap for us. We want people to recognize us. We long for those things, and because we long for them and we don't think we're getting them, or we're afraid we won't, we put on the mask of someone who will. We begin to wear the mask of someone who we think will respect us. Pharisees were desperate to be noticed for their piety. Because you know what? They were genuinely pious. They were pretty good. They were really good people. You would want Pharisees in your neighborhood. You know, you want to, if you have next door neighbors, you want them to be Pharisees. They're good people. They're just well liked, right? They're respected. They're honored. They're good folks. You know, they're generous because they have to be, as it says right in the Torah, that they have to tithe. You know, that they do those things. They're doing all the stuff. Man, you want to live in a neighborhood full of Pharisees because they're nice people. But you know what? From a Pharisee who knows what his true motives are, or what that way down inside stuff, that Pharisee knows, I am messed up. I can't really live this way. But I'm stuck by this set of rules, and trust me, they had rules. You had to tithe. You had to give 10% of everything. That means you had to take your herbs. You know, we have, Kathy and I love to cook, so we have like a thing of herbs, like you can't believe, because we're always using all kinds of, and we have herbs in the garden, and that's just really fun. You know what? You're supposed to cut those things, and you're supposed to take 10% of your cumin, and, you know, and you're supposed to give it away. You're supposed to, I mean, that was a part of the requirement. I mean, they have like really nasty rules. And they have rules that they made up and added, right? They added it, and they just kept adding more rules, right? So you, and by the way, this is a little gross, but I always love this one. You can't spit on the Sabbath. Saturday was their Sabbath. You could not spit on the Sabbath. Want to know why? Because it's work. Because if you spit, it could roll and collect dirt. And if it collects dirt or clay and it gets too big, then it's like forming a brick, right? And so, and that would be making bricks on the Sabbath, and you can't make bricks on the Sabbath. And that's the kind of rules they had, okay? They're that, I mean, they are really that crazy. That's why you wouldn't mind having them as neighbors, although they drive you a little nuts, right? Because, because they'd be on you about your yard and all that kind of stuff. And because it's about appearance, right? And they're really afraid. They're really afraid about appearance, what they look like. And they know that they can't maintain it. So they scrunch up their faces. And they look like, and they probably really are fasting, but they scrunch up their faces. Why? Because they want to be applauded for. They want it noticed. They just long for to be seen. To be seen. To be noticed. We get stuff when we put on our mask. We get the stuff we want. I got respected in the auto parts business. Although they eventually made me the chief financial officer and not the operations manager. But I didn't know about auto parts, but I knew about money. And so it was like, people gave me power. In my false identity as this great businessman, I had power. I got what I wanted. I got noticed. I got respected. And so I looked like an auto parts guy, although, you know, we all know better. But I looked like it. And in looking like that, I got power, and I got status, and I got position, and I got money, and I got rewarded. And so my false identity got rewarded. So what happens when something gets rewarded? Stick with it, you know? Why not? It's working. It's working so far. I am Joe Businessman. It's working for me. I like it. And then God comes and crushes all that. He has a really nasty habit of doing that. Most of us, I think, believe that God is powerless and that people have power. We give people a lot of power because we're afraid that God is powerless, that God won't come through. And you know this weird thing about God is he's real slow. He's real slow. He doesn't come through on demand. He doesn't give you what you want when you want it, no matter what anybody tells you. He's not an on-demand God. He does not feed, very clearly, he will not feed your false identity. He doesn't feed the guy in the mask, the girl in the mask. He doesn't feed that. Matter of fact, what he does is tear it down, rip it off. He begins that process. Now, there's a couple things you can do with masks. You can either unmask yourself, which is really tremendously hard, or you can begin the process of helping each other to unmask, which is even harder because it requires trust. Back in Genesis, when Adam and Eve first sinned and they hide, and that's what they tell God. God says, "Why are you hiding from me?" He says, "I was what? Naked and afraid." Naked, vulnerable, right? I am vulnerable and I am terrified. I am naked and scared. When we are unmasked, we are made vulnerable. And that's a scary place to be. It's a scary place to be with God. It's a really scary place to be with each other. It's interesting because we have a story in the Bible that I've always loved because it's Paul, and he's one of the he's kind of the apostle that comes after the other apostles, and he goes to Peter, and what has happened is Peter, who was Jewish, was keeping all the ceremonial law, and then at one point when he becomes a Jesus follower, a Christ follower, at that point, at some point after that, he realizes that he no longer has to keep up all these customs and do all these things that he thought he had to do. And so he gives them up, and he's always hanging out with people who aren't Jewish, and he's eating with them, and he's, you know, doing all the things that Jews in that day were not allowed to do. He's not being a good guy, according to the order, religious order of the Jewish folk. And so he's being very careful. But then what happens is some Jewish people come, and they have dinner with him. So then all of a sudden he's very ceremonial, and he's doing all the right things, and he's eating the right foods. And what? Two-facedness, right? Just hypocrisy. And so I love this little part. It says, Paul saying, "When Peter came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face, because he was clearly in the wrong. Before certain men came from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles, because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group. The other Jews joined him in his hypocrisy, so that by their hypocrisy, even Barnabas was led astray." Wow. Right? Hypocrisy is catching, folks. Okay? When you practice hypocrisy, you teach others to be hypocrites. When you're not open and vulnerable, you're teaching others to be open and vulnerable. But we stand in that place all the time, right? I will not be vulnerable. I am naked. I'm ashamed. I'm flawed. I don't want people to know. And yet, I have this power, I've been freed, and we run back and forth in that little space. And so Paul just goes after Peter. So I wonder what that's like in a community that wants to fight against hypocrisy. I wonder what that's like for us as we choose to fight against hypocrisy, if we're going to choose that. Because after all, if the mask is working for you, right, we're going to keep wearing the mask and keep wearing the mask and keep wearing the mask because we think it works for us. But you know what? The problem with masks is they begin to scrunch your face into a really weird shape, right? It begins to not fit. And here's the dirty little secret about hypocrites, is we always notice it in everybody else. Right? Spend any time at all with somebody and you'll find out where they're hypocrites. You go out to the basketball court with me and hear me trash talking. Oh, he doesn't talk like that in church. Well, sometimes he does, but... Would you talk exactly the same way in front of your boss as you do in front of your spouse, as you do in front of your kids, as you do in front of the church, as you do in front of your neighbors? Like, are we the same everywhere? Or do we put on those masks? So what's it like for us? What does it feel like? What ought we be doing as we start confronting hypocrisy? Well, the beautiful thing is that you can confront it in yourself. But I think that's almost an impossible option. I mean, eventually we can. But the beginning is just, we are so used to our hypocrisy that we think it's what? Just the way life is. I have to be like this because it's what works. It's what works. I have to do this because it works. Most of us in this room are very utilitarian. If it's working for us, we just stick with it. Right? But then as it slowly unwinds, the problem with and then what happens is somebody comes along and rips off our masks. Right? Says, "Wow, you're a pastor? I didn't know you were a pastor, because I heard you over at the Good Egg, and you were like cussing at that guy, or that guy cut you off, and you were screaming at him and flipping him off out the window. You're like a pastor? Wow, that's like weird, man. Like, how do you put those two together, right? So what happens is, I've been unmasked, right? Somebody just came and ripped this mask that I had carefully shaped and was hitting my contorted face, and I was looking good, I thought, and now all of a sudden I'm not. And so when those times happen, and we run to what? We run to each other, we run to our community, we run to the people that we trust. Remember those few people that we, okay, they what? Accept me as I am, right? We're always looking for the people who accept me as I am. If you don't like me, hit the road. But there's a few people who just take me as I am. The weird thing about Jesus is he takes us as we are. And then he begins this long process of ripping off our masks, changing us, making us into our true identity. What he wants us to be. What he created us to be. The unmasking that we do for each other, I think Peter says, when you see how he did, or when Paul did that to Peter, you see a couple things that he did in community, I think, that really help, and things we should pay attention. One is, he did it face to face. Eric's been talking about facing, and when we talk about facing God and turning to face and facing each other, right? You cannot confront someone's hypocrisy by writing them a letter. You can't confront someone's hypocrisy by talking to someone else about it, hoping it will get back to them, right? It's a requirement that you become face to face. When we become face to face, what happens? We're both uncomfortable, right? There's just this discomfort as we turn and as we look and as we go face to face, because now he's looking at me. and there is that thing of shrinking away, right? There is that, I didn't school him on that, right? It's hard to be face to face. It's hard to really look into each other's eyes with the purpose of telling the truth. So you have to do it face to face. If there are hypocrites around you, and if you need to, and if people come, you need to ask them to simply say, if you see this in my life, if you see where I am just being hypocritical, come face to face. Look me in the eye and say it. I love that Paul was direct. You know, he didn't go this long journey around. So, you know, there are people I've heard that do this thing, and the whole like third person twice removed thing or whatever it is we do, that, you know, they're kind of hoping that they'll catch the hint that it's them, okay? That we kind of talk in big circles about the general problem of people who eat one way in front of one group and eat this other way in front of this other group, and then we kind of make it a big thing. No. I opposed him to his face. I opposed him. I said, you know what? That's just wrong. That's just wrong. What you're doing is flat out wrong. He's very direct. Now, whenever we tell the truth, which is what that is, right? We tell the truth in love. And if you're not prepared to do it in love, then don't do it. Okay? If you're not prepared to say lovingly, I care about you, but here's where I see your flaw. Peter and Paul are in relationship. They care about each other. They can be direct because they've earned the right to be direct, and they actually do love each other. They want good things for each other. It's done in relationship. It's done with love and compassion. And Paul, if you read his other writings, is pretty aware of his own flaws. He announces them. I am the least of the apostles. I'm not in this position to lord it over you and say, I am the greatest apostle that ever was, and I'm telling you, you're just screwed up. He doesn't do that to Peter. He's saying, no, I'm the least of the apostles, but I see this flaw, right? I see this area where it's just wrong. Hypocrisy is a killer of relationship because it rests, it gives power to our false identity, and it takes away the power of the identity that Christ has placed in us. I don't know where your areas of shame are. I don't know where your areas of fear are. I don't know where you hurt. I don't know where you're in pain. I don't know where you, all the places that you want to hide. But I know that those places that we want to hide are the places that we begin to put on the masks. Those things that we want people to believe about us are those places where we begin to put on the mask. And I guarantee you, eventually the mask contorts your face and you can't get out of it. You need each other and you need to ask God, God, how do I deal with this place where I'm masked? When you confess your hypocrisy, there's an amazing thing that God does, and that's that He forgives you. He doesn't hold it against you. Eric said last week that this passage is about forgiveness, and that's absolutely it. And it is incredibly freeing and incredibly terrifying to unmask. And the terrifying comes first. And the freeing comes later. When you confess that you don't measure up, that you're not capable and competent, and that it's okay, it's a terrifying moment. God will honor that. Isaiah 66:2. This is the one I esteem, he who is humble and contrite in spirit and trembles at my word. Isaiah 57:15. For this is what the high and lofty one says, he who lives forever, whose name is holy. I live in a high and holy place, but also with him who is contrite and lowly in spirit, to revive the spirit of the lowly, and to revive the heart of the contrite. Psalm 51:16 and 17. David says to God, you do not delight in sacrifice, or I would bring it. You do not take pleasure in burnt offerings. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. God doesn't despise who you are. He loves you. And when we are broken and open and honest, He speaks to that place and He protects us. Doesn't mean that He gives us instantly the thing we long for. And sometimes it means that He doesn't give it to us at all, but instead gives us Himself. And He becomes enough. And we no longer need that thing that the mask gave us, because we get from God that longing, that passion, that desire. So what are your pushbacks? What's comments, questions, responses? Frown.
Thank you.
if we could just do things poorly and that would be good enough and upon it. I remember when I handed out a long time a creative project and just in an envelope put write a poem. This month I will write a poem, or I'll paint a painting, or I'll draw a picture, or I'll sculpt something, or whatever. And we just randomly handed them out, and people had to do that thing, even if they'd never done it before. And then we had the art show, right? And the, or the show, the service a month later, where we all brought that stuff, and we took excellence off the table, right? It didn't have to be good. It didn't have to be excellent. But it still made us all uncomfortable, right? Because it's what? It's revealing, right? It shows who I am. It exposes me. I get exposed. The sin is, I'm naked, I'm going to hide, I'm not going to be exposed. And if I'm going to be exposed, it's only in those areas where I'm capable, competent, perfect. Anyone else? Right. Right. The cue is to not be caught rather than the cue being to just stop the behavior. Exactly. Peter and Paul didn't just, you know, it wasn't 2 days into the relationship. It was, you know. And by the way, you have this issue, and I mean, you know, no, it's exactly that. It's they've gone through hell together. They've gone through tough times together. They've gone through good times together. They've been around each other for a long time. So absolutely. Very, very good. Very, very good. One of the, I was talking to Ryan before the service, and I was kind of telling him about one of my longings was to plant a church for the Christian Reformed denomination, and I kept all their rules, or tried to, but I found that I couldn't, you know, like I couldn't be in the village, and, you know, because the thing I was trying to do fell apart, but I wanted to hide, so I wouldn't just, like I actually filled out their reports, and then I finally stopped filling out the reports because it just looked stupid, like I just couldn't make it work, you know, and so I remember the day, and by the way, it feels like death, right? I had to walk before all these Christian Reform people and the elders and pastors and leaders and I had to say, you know, because I was being challenged because I wasn't doing what they had hired me to do. And so I just went before them and I remember saying, okay, this feels like death because this thing that I love is going to die. And so I just, you know, and the guy called me right beforehand. He says, whatever you do, just be honest. Just say what you think. So I said, I love the Christian Reformed Church. I was born into it. I grew in it. It's a Presbyterian. I mean, it's a beautiful place. I love these people. I love you. And I love the village. And I love what it's happening. And I can't put the two together. They don't fit together. There's no way. I can't get one inside of the other and the other. It's not going to work. But I love them both. And I love you both. And I said, and if you make me choose, and I guess you're making me choose, then I choose the village because the village is my community and they're my people. And I love them and they're what God's doing in my life. And so I choose there. But I don't want to choose. And I looked up and I remember everybody was weeping. These old elders, tears streaming down their faces. And I was stunned. And then they made this weird rule, which had never happened in the history of the denomination, where they said, we will loan you to the village, and you can still participate with us and be part of us, and you can be part of them, and we can learn from you guys, and you can maybe learn from us. And it's just been so weird, because that's exactly what happened. The thing that I was so terrified of was that I had to leave one or leave the other, and I didn't want to leave either one. You know, we get to that place where you have to make a choice. And the choice always feels like dying, right? Like if I don't dress up the part and I don't play the role and I don't go do the right thing and I don't fill out the form correctly, then they're going to reject me. And then God does this wacky, crazy thing, right? Like it doesn't, we don't even understand all the wacky things that God would love to do if we would just let him by walking into those really scary places as just who we are. And so for me to say out loud, those two things was really awkward and weird, and yet the beauty of that was that God found this crazy way. And now we're sort of in this really wacky relationship even to this day. And you know, and who knows where that'll end up. But it's just funny how God works. But then even as I say that, and I told Ryan this too, even as I say that, then right away we start plotting. Ah, so if I give in, then I'll get what I want and what I really love. Because it doesn't work that way. Because God could just as quickly have said, you don't need the Christian Reformed Church. You got the village. You'll never see them again. You'll never have any relationship with them. That's my desire. And it's done. It's over. Like, you know, because we want to decide how God works and how it has to, you know, what the right answer is. God doesn't work that way. So. Yeah. Absolutely. Beautiful. Anyone else? Let's pray. Father, we are all sitting here as hypocrites with stuff we hide, with stuff we're ashamed to reveal about ourselves. Father, help us to trust you, because ultimately it's about trusting you. Trusting you with our imperfections, our flaws, our missing it by 2/100ths of a second, our not being the best. Father, Father, guard us as we help each other to unmask. Help us to speak the truth with tears streaming down our face, knowing the heart, loving and pursuing each other. And Father, as you tear away our masks, and as we walk in the joy of being open and vulnerable before you, let the words that would kill us fall harmlessly to the ground. Let the eyes of the people who look at us, let them be ashamed as we walk in the sheer joy of who you've made us and what you've called us to. I pray it all in Jesus' name. Amen. As we worship, there is bread and juice back there. If you know Jesus and you're a Jesus follower, go take that bread, dip it in the juice, and eat it. And as you do that, remember that he died for you and that he takes away our shame and our hypocrisy and our lies and all the stuff, the sin of our lives. He gives us a new identity. Remember that. There are things that you want to talk to, have someone talk to God about. The sinner's chair is back there. It's just, you've been sinned against. If you've sinned, if there's just sin around you, and just something you need lifted to God, just sit there and someone will come and pray over you. There should be baskets somewhere around town. If you brought an offering or a gift, share the offering. If you'd like to do that.